I had gotten a call from the general editor, Rick Smolin, who had been reading something I had written about Latinos and civil rights, and thought to himself, well, maybe this is the guy we should have write that chapter. And we knocked it back and forth, and it sounded like a great project to be a part of. And I submitted my manuscript, and never imagining what a beautiful book would arrive in the mail a couple of months later. It's really exciting to be a part of that project.
Now, you talk about the unbelievable discrimination that a lot of Latino Americans have experienced through the years. This is obviously a personal topic for you. You even talk a little bit about your own personal history and your family's personal history.
My family came to the country in stages between the late 30s and the early 50s. Like hundreds of thousands of other Puerto Ricans, my family went to New York and came to a city that was not welcoming, that was being cast in a historic role that it had very little interest in playing. Back on the island, there was a new constitution, a new governor, and a new economic development plan. And down in the tiny, tiny type of that economic plan was the acknowledgement that in order for the industrialization of Puerto Rico to work, 750,000 people would have to leave the island, because transforming the economy from an agricultural one to an industrial one was just going to need a lot less people. And subsidized plane fares and various initiatives that made it easy to move from the island eventually led to something pretty close to that planned number. Between 750,000 and 1 million people moving to the American mainland. There had been Puerto Rican neighborhoods in the United States before the Second World War, but they were small, vestigial, really, and they were in cities that were long-time trading ports with Puerto Rico and the Caribbean, places like New York. And as often happens in American immigration and migration, if there are places where there are people already who you know, you go to that place. If you're looking at a map of a country that's the size of a continent and wondering, where should I go? Maybe a place where there are already a couple of thousand people who speak Spanish, maybe where a relative had already gone ahead, maybe a place where there were already understood to be jobs. In the case of New York and the Puerto Rican diaspora, history played kind of a rough trick, and there were many other places that were really set to zoom in the early 50s, really take off economically. New York, however, was at the apex of its power, its influence, its reach into American culture, its share of the overall American economy, and was about to embark on a multi-decade slide. So Puerto Ricans arrived in large numbers in a city that was about to embark on years of decline, and it ended up being a terrible deal. Had they gone to Florida instead, history might have been different. Had they gone to the Southwest instead, history might have been different. But they didn't. They went to New York, and it was a rough 40 years after that first big arrival.
What do you think the importance is of discussing that history and discussing the history of Latino Americans from Mexico, from Puerto Rico, from Cuba, and discussing the struggles that they've had to endure?
I think it's important because it helps place a people. There are 57 million people now in the country who are the descendants of immigration from Spanish-speaking countries in the hemisphere. And it would be a good idea for our fellow Americans to understand the history of why we came, why we're here, what we're looking for, and what we've undergone in the process of becoming American. Not that I want to ever enter some oppression competition where one group says to the other, oh, you think you had it, but listen to this. It's not that at all, but it helps put into context why over different decades people have come from different places in the hemisphere. Because Americans are so heavily ahistorical, because they tend to look toward Europe when they talk about history and tend not to look at the rest of the hemisphere, they're not malicious, but just unaware of the deep links between the United States and the rest of the hemisphere, the deep involvement of American capital, the deep involvement of American military force, and how over time it meant at some points Cubans were coming in large numbers, at some points Mexicans were coming in large numbers, at some points Dominicans were coming in large numbers. There's reasons for all of it, and it's a pretty important thing if you're going to look at the way the country is changing for the rest of the 21st century. It's a pretty important thing to understand how this all happened.
Now, discussing this book as a whole, seeing all of these histories and all of these differing forms of oppression and differing forms of cruelty, what is the importance of discussing this now in 2018?
The reason it's so important to do in 2018 is because there's this myth that various people came here to be moochers. They came here with their hands open to ask for things for free from the country that was taking them in. And if you read the stories by such outstanding people as Bryan Stevenson and George Takei, you realize, you have to realize, if you're being honest, that that's never been the case. Everybody worked hard and didn't want anything from this country that other Americans weren't already getting, didn't want anything from this country that other Americans weren't already guaranteed by the condition of their citizenship and by their condition of participating in this great big society. And yet, there's this persistent narrative held by many people in the majority population that all these other people around them are somehow illicit, not fully fledged, not shoulders to the wheel the way they are and the way their ancestors were. And this book is a really necessary and useful corrective to that fake historical narrative that there are some people who are real Americans and there are some people who are moochers and takers who give back little in return.
I do believe that fake historical narrative is improving. We have a president whose platform was to build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. Are things getting better or worse?
Well, I would say that a lot of people are getting encouragement in retaining that fake historical narrative. And every year, various research outfits, Gallup, Pew, National Opinion Research Center in Chicago, ask Americans about their racial attitudes. And now a majority of white Americans, for instance, tell pollsters that the reason for black gaps between black and white earnings and black and white wealth in the country are not from historic exclusion from the American economy. They say that it's as easy for other people to get ahead as it is for whites. They say that skin color and ethnic origin are not a handicap toward making it in the United States. These are majorities. And no matter how much we know and how much we've measured about the impact of your origin on your life chances in the United States, many Americans are willing to minimize or even erase the impact that race and ethnic origin can have on whether and where you own a house, how much that house appreciates in value, when and where and to how long you get sentenced for a drug violation, when we know that different kinds of Americans all use illicit drugs at roughly the same level. Blacks and Latinos are sentenced for drug crimes at far higher rates than white Americans. We know these things. And yet there is widespread denial that race informs the way our education system works, the way our political system works, the way our justice system works.
What is your vision for America in 30 years?
Wow. Well, I think if you had asked me that question 10 years ago, I might have had a different answer. There was a flush of optimism that accompanied the arrival of the Obama administration in the White House, and you can see it in the president's approval numbers. He had approval from a far higher number of Americans than even voted for him for president. And people felt that, in a sense, America was about to get a monkey off its back, that the road to a majority-minority America was going to be a lot easier than we might have thought at another time in our history. But now, with the interval of these years of the chorus of racial invective and slander against President Obama during his years in the White House, the anxiety among white Americans about what it means to live in a culture where there's still by far the largest single population in the country, but no longer the unquestioned and sizable majority that they once were. I think that road is going to be tougher, and I think that majority-minority America is going to be a more tense place than I had hoped for.
And is there anything that you would like to add?
I think Americans of all backgrounds can read The Good Fight and come away both with a greater appreciation of the struggles different people have had across American history, but also a reminder of the genius of the American system. We have reparative institutions. We don't always get things right on the first pass. We don't always get things right at the first opportunity. But eventually, over time, we do get things right. And we do it without constant war. We do it without constant violence. We do it without uprisings in the streets. We do it through courts and debate and legislatures and law and the way people think and talk and act toward each other changing over time. Yes, there's a lot of sobering stories in The Good Fight. You'll come away from the book reminded of just how tough it can be to get over in America. And yet at the same time, you should come away from reading the book with a sense of optimism about the things that this country has been able to pull off. Pull off a multiracial society undergirded by the rule of law in a way that many other places in the world haven't been able to do. It's a love letter to America at the same time as it's a bill of particulars about the times that it's fallen short.
All right. We've been speaking with Ray Suarez, one of the many authors of The Good Fight. Thank you for agreeing to speak with us.
Great to talk to you.